It's Tuesday, September 1st, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Once again, I'm late with posting the stash, but I have a good reason. We're getting prepared for Normal Show Live this weekend, and man, there's a million loose ends I've got to get tied up. This weekend's our debut show, and I'm proud to feature the three authors of the best-selling book Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? Normal's Paul Armentano, MPP's Steve Fox, and Safer's Mason Tevert will be joining us in the first hour of Normal Show Live this Saturday, 6 p.m. at live.normal.org. That's Pacific time. In our second hour, we'll be visiting with Toby Greer, the mixed martial artist in California who's been banned from fighting because of his use of medical marijuana. And speaking of sports, another reason I'm excited with the beginning of September is the college and professional football seasons. And I had to get out my Boise State University car flags today and put them on the old car as I drove around town, because this Thursday, my beloved Broncos play on the blue turf against the Oregon Ducks. So it makes my car quite a standout here in Portland, Oregon. We also had a story that popped up late today on Santa Fe, New Mexico. The New Mexico medical marijuana law allows for a licensed provider of medical marijuana, and there's just one nonprofit down there taking care of that. They have sold out. They are out of marijuana and won't have any until October. We'll catch you up on the news on that one tomorrow. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere. It's time to look at our normal calendar of events, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. We've only got two events for Wednesday, September 2nd. Joplin Normal wants to announce the Cannabis Revival at Landreth Park in Joplin, Missouri. Mason Tevert from Safer will be the keynote speaker there. The fun starts at 10 a.m. local time. And Salt Lake City Normal wants you to be there for Noon Tunes, Music on the Patio. This is at 200 South Central Campus Drive in Salt Lake City at the University of Utah Union Patio. Join University of Utah SSDP and Salt Lake City Normal to learn more about marijuana law reform in the Beehive State. To get your Normal Chapter's events announced on this podcast, send an email to stash@normal.org. for instructions on how to create your Google Calendar and share it with us here at Normal. It's a Normal shout-out. Our shout-outs go international today to both France and Mexico, which I guess would be cry-outs and grito-outs. It probably loses something in the translation. But I did receive an email from a listener in France who was interested in what was going on in marijuana law reform in that country. And, of course, we've been following the story of decriminalization in Mexico. I received emails from Cupid down there, C-U-P-I-H-D, the Mexican drug law reform group. And they had also asked about starting a Mexico Normal to be more focused on just the issue of marijuana. So folks in Mexico or France or anywhere around the world listening to my voice, I can help you start an international chapter of Normal to focus solely on the message of responsible adult cannabis use. Just send me an email at stash@normal.org. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines and a look at Pinellas County, Florida, and how the sheriff's office there treats employees who are busted for drunk driving versus busted for marijuana use. Fred Gardner from O'Shaughnessy shares an interview with Sergeant Northcutt from the United States Marine Corps, an Iraq veteran persecuted for his use of medical marijuana to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. And in Reefer Madness, we take a look inside Sean Hannity's America and one of his forum members' views on marijuana and its users. This is a shocking one. You'll love to hear this one. In our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, it's Variety Tuesday, and we feature Howard Glazer with his song Smoking and Drinking. In our Government at Work segment, we feature former Seattle Police Chief Norm Stamper and my interview with him upon the selection of former Seattle Police Chief and his successor, Gil Kerlikowske, as the nation's drug czar. All that and more thanks for your donations for the El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest this last Saturday, coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Pinellas County Sheriff's Office punishes drunk driving deputy less severely than pot-smoking jail nurse. From Tampa Bay Online. The sheriff's office this morning released 11 memoranda regarding employees who had recently been fired or suspended. Deputy James Campbell was suspended for 40 hours following a May 30th charge of drunken driving. According to a sheriff's memorandum, breath tests put his blood alcohol levels at 0.309 and 0.307, more than 3 times 0.08, the threshold at which a driver in Florida is presumed intoxicated. Campbell's case is still winding through the judicial system. Michael Selly, a registered nurse at the Pinellas County Jail, was suspended for 56 hours after deputies got a tip he had marijuana at his home while he was off duty. He eventually pleaded no contest to marijuana possession and possession of drug paraphernalia. A deputy driving drunk, hammered, gets 40 hours. A nurse, smoking a bong at home, gets 56 hours. A man, allowed to carry and shoot a gun, is driving around with blood alcohol levels like a batting average, so we have to suspend him 5 days. But the nurse at the jail smokes pot at home. Not at work, not accused of bringing it to work and giving it to prisoners. He unwinds from a long day treating prisoners by puffing on a smoldering weed in the privacy of his own home and would never have even been known to smoke marijuana but for an anonymous tip to his employer, the sheriff. That pot-smoking guy, who doesn't carry a gun and works only with the incarcerated in a very secure facility, that guy we have to suspend for an extra 2 days. Because, We want to protect the children. Sergeant Northcutt's post-Iraq nightmare. Support the troops, unless they need medical marijuana. This is an interview that was conducted by Fred Gardner, the publisher of O'Shaughnessy's magazine. This is a medical marijuana newspaper you can pick up here on the West Coast and probably elsewhere. And the article is posted at alternet.org. I have a link to it up at stash.normal.org. And it's an interview with Marine Sergeant Philip Northcutt, one of thousands of Iraq veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder who can benefit so much from medical marijuana but are persecuted for doing so. Again, please go to the link and read the whole thing. It's very long, but I have excerpted a few clips in Sergeant Northcutt's own words. We lost our commanding officer to a suicide car bomber like 1,500 meters from the gate. The psychs came out to see us, and they said, "We're going to do a screening of you guys. We want you guys to get help." So we went over there and got interviewed by a Navy captain. He said, "What you have is called chronic post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a natural result of you being in combat and seeing the things you've seen, blah, blah, blah." The questions were, "Are you having nightmares?" "Fuck yes." "Are you kidding me?" "Do you know what I saw yesterday?" "Are you having intrusive thoughts?" "Yes, fucking of course." They went through this whole series of questions that obviously, if you're in combat and you're being honest, the answer is yes to all of them. The MRI showed that my L4 and L5 discs were bulging. They were pinching my sciatic nerve and causing me severe pain down to the back of my knees. They showed no interest in my PTSD. There was never a word about TBI. 3 years later, a VA doctor in Martinez diagnosed me with traumatic brain injury. While on medical hold, I would be given a grocery bag full of really heavy shit. Hydrocodones, antidepressants, Neurontin, Seroquel, anti-nightmare pills. Half of it you get really fucking high on. You get back and they just push like 10 pills on you right away. I started realizing, of all the crap they're giving me, I feel the best when I'm smoking herb. That's weird. When I just smoke herb, I feel kind of relaxed. I don't feel so stressed out. I don't feel the depression. I don't feel the guilt. Eventually, I realized, this is real medicine. It helped me relax so I could sleep. That's a big difference. The pills just knock you the fuck out. You're just gone. Even if you don't want to go to sleep, you're still sleeping, which can be pretty dangerous. Once I decided to become a medical marijuana patient, that's when everything changed. One of the really wild things that happened was I became a gardener for the first time in my life. I was developing a love of plants and an appreciation of nature. And I was developing a relationship with God. Instead of killing and maiming, I was making things grow. Next thing you know, they're issuing a warrant for my business based on my electric bill of $600, which is not high in an industrial zone. The diesel shop next door uses three times as much. They took me downtown to L.A. County Jail for booking, and the whole time they're talking shit to me. "Who do you think you are? You think you're bad? You think you're Rambo?" I lost my business. I lost my car. I lost my respect in the community. I lost all my money trying to defend myself. I literally had nothing to my name. Jennifer had moved back to Oklahoma to stay with her mom while I was in jail.
Is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
In Hannity's America, quote, "Damn disgusting pot smokers are the root cause of every evil in the world," end quote. I don't usually troll around the website of the Sean Hannity Show, but the Fresh Stashers posted this link to a remarkable comment that I had to share. First, though, the comment came on the subject of a poll from the discussion groups that asked, "Is marijuana more damaging to society and oneself than alcohol?" They could choose less damaging, more damaging, or about the same. And what dropped my jaw at 4:20 p.m. local time was that 63% of Hannity's voters think marijuana is safer than alcohol. On to the comment. G. Duane from Phoenix, Arizona. The first ones I found were on page 35 of the forum from the link in the stash. I followed backwards, scanning this character all the way to page 1. Many of them are typical reefer madness I've debunked so many times in the past, like it makes you go schizo, you know, there's more emergency room visits, etc. So instead, I'll just give you the distilled philosophy of G. Duane. Here are some of the lowlights, just from pages 34 and 35.
The main thing that separates humans from animals is self-awareness and intelligence. Things that marijuana impairs. People who smoke marijuana are abandoning humanity. They have become as monsters, like Dr. Jekyll turned into Mr. Hyde.
No, really. This is a 21st century person, not one of my 1930s Randolph Hearst quotes.
I don't even want to see the face of any bastard who has touched marijuana. I hate them. I hate their hedonism, their lawlessness. Their very existence is vulgar, and I want their kind gone.
I want their kind gone. Doesn't that sound chillingly Nazi?
Godwin alert. Hysterical reference to Nazi Germany. Godwin alert. Hysterical reference to Nazi Germany.
No, I know Godwin's law. I was just making a nice segue for G. Duane's next comment about why we shouldn't legalize and just put the cartels out of business.
You're identifying an enemy and suggesting that we should join them, do what they do, and do it better than they do. Good thing we didn't fight the Nazis that way, because we'd still have concentration camps in America.
Remember that glorious day when we finally got rid of the concentration camps in America? Neither do I.
It's the worst of all the drugs because it's touted as being harmless in order to get little kids hooked on it. The average age of initiation or first use of marijuana is 14.4 years old. That's child molestation, so far as I'm concerned. Damn disgusting pot smokers are the root cause of every evil in the world.
I don't know where he got that stat. According to the Substance Abuse Mental Health Data Archive of the U.S. government, and cited at adolescent-substance-abuse.com, quote, the average age of initiation of marijuana use in 1999 was 17.0 years. Since 1992, the average age has ranged from 16.5 to 17.4, end quote. I guess it's still technically child molestation at age 17. Oh, by the way, quote, the average age at first alcoholic drink has increased slightly from 16.1 in 1984 to 16.2 in 2002, end quote. Mr. G. Duane has so many sensible people responding to his ludicrous claims, and in response, he returns with logic so twisted, only the reefer mad can understand it. Another person commented on how legalization would remove most of the smugglers' profits, which got this reply.
Marijuana is actually a useful idiot in the war on drugs because it's so bulky that it takes up a lot of space in a smuggler's cargo. Being illegal, it keeps out a lot of more dangerous drugs, which would be otherwise smuggled in.
So, if we legalize and remove the bales of Mexican brickweed, that just makes more space for the coke and heroin. Okay. Two questions. One, why don't they just remove the bales now? And two, if they do smuggle in more coke and heroin, who buys it?
The Mexican drug cartels murder people because they like to murder people. That's who they are, and it's what they do. They'd kill you or me for a Klondike bar. They don't kill for money or profit or business. They're killers because that's what they love to do, and they'd do it for free. They're not even remotely in it for the money. They just love the violence. They're criminally vicious and incapable of being reformed.
I'll actually agree a little with this one. The cartel gangsters who are drilling people's heads, dipping bodies in acid, decapitating, yes, they are criminally vicious and probably incapable of being reformed. So, if that is the case, should we provide for them a lucrative, unregulated business that provides all the power and protection that money and corruption can buy? A business that rewards them for their criminally vicious nature? Al Capone was just a low-life gangster until Prohibition gave him the opportunity to take his vicious criminal nature to the big time.
The best way to reform marijuana laws would be to make distributing pot to a minor a death penalty offense. If a kid has pot and he got it from an adult, the adult needs to die. There's no place for child predators in this world, and especially not for child predators who prey on kids for money.
Wait a minute, I thought they weren't in it for the money. Well, I've got news for you, G. Dwayne. Most of the kids getting pot are getting it from another kid. There are over 1 million teenage pot dealers in America. Unlike alcohol, where kids have to find one adult who will illegally buy it from another adult, kids today find it easier to get pot than alcohol, a stat that's risen 37% in the past 2 years.
If you want to win people over, you can't just drone on like Ben Stein. You've got to have a little more showmanship. Here. Watch.
NormalCon 2009. Yes, We Cannabis. September 24th through 26th, 2009, in San Francisco, California.
The war on drugs has been an utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama was right in 2004, and 5 years later, the American people agree.
I think it's time for debate, and I think that we ought to study very carefully on what other countries are doing that have legalized marijuana.
At our 38th annual conference, you'll learn all the facts you need in the debate to legalize marijuana.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary and it's not in mine.
We're working hard to make sure legalization is in the drug czar's vocabulary.
Whether legalizing marijuana would improve the economy. The answer is no, I don't think that is a good strategy.
There's nothing funny about legalization, Mr. President, or waiting until the last minute to book your trip to NormalCon 2009. Early bird registration rates apply until August. Registration, sponsorships, and vending information is available at norml.org or by calling 888-67-NORMAL. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling while promoting the message of reform. To donate your song for possible use on the stash, enter it in the next Marijuana Music Awards contest today. For Variety Tuesday, we're listening to Smokin' and Drinkin' by Howard Glazer and the EL34s, winner of 2007's Marijuana Music Awards Best Blues. Howard Glazer is an experienced blues, acoustic, and rock musician, having toured nationally and internationally across the USA, Japan, Australia, Europe, the Czech Republic, and many other countries. Howard has played with legends such as B.B. King, Lonnie Brooks, and many more. The band receives extensive radio airplay and are charted number 19 on the blues radio charts. For the latest about Howard Glazer and the EL34s, check out myspace.com/Howard Glazer and enjoy Smokin' and Drinkin' by Howard Glazer and the EL34s.
Smokin' drinkin', baby, every day and night. Got to twist one up to feel alright. Early in the morning, afternoon and night. Got the best hopefully drinking. Makes me feel alright. Flying high. Flying high. Smoking, drinking, baby. Gonna make me feel alright. Gonna fire one up. Gonna fire up another. Smoke one more. Pass it to my brother. Every day, the morning too. Gotta keep on smoking and drinking. But got to be true. Cause I get high. Yeah. Well, I get high. Smoking, drinking, baby. Gonna make me feel alright. Into a little bit of whiskey. Now toast to you. I'm feeling tipsy, staggering too. Got to come out smoking and drinking, but got to be true. Cause I get high. I get high. Smoking, drinking, baby. Gonna make me feel alright. On the rocks or straight up. Your glass is empty. Get another cup. I'm feeling tipsy. Staggering too. Got to quit smoking and drinking. I got to be true. Cause I get high. Well, I get high. Smoking, drinking, baby. Gonna make me feel alright. To make me feel alright.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Tuesday is our look at your government at work here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, The steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws. Body dies, the ego cries, the birds they sing, the creatures learn. It's an honest day's work. Yeah, 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 yeah. If you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org and let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work. The afternoon pollution rises high into the sky. How can we still deny? Today we got the news that Seattle Police Chief Gil Kerlikowske most likely has accepted a job as the new drug czar. To join us here with a discussion on that is the former police chief before Gil Kerlikowske, Norm Stamper, who joins us by telephone. And Norm, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Russ. Great to be with you.
Now, for people outside of the Pacific Northwest area, they might not know a lot about Chief Kerlikowske. Can you give us some background on the chief, how he came into the job, and how his tenure has been so far?
I'd be happy to do that. Gil was a police chief in a Florida city, then became a police chief in Buffalo, New York. Went to work when he left that position with the COPS office, that's Community Oriented Policing Services, out of Washington, D.C. Spent a couple of years there before he was named as my successor in 2000 as police chief in Seattle.
I see. So now the rumor here, what we're reading from the Seattle PI here, is that he'll take over the drug czar's job. And I don't expect you to be able to read the man's mind, but does his past or does his tenure as Seattle's police chief give us any clues as to how he might treat drug policy?
Well, I think it does. You can't be a police chief in a major city with drug issues before you all the time without establishing a track record. I will start by saying that I think Kerlikowske will be better than John Walters.
Yeah.
I know. That's not saying much. I think what we see in Gil's background is that he opposed Initiative I-75, which was the voter-initiated act that would require police officers in the city of Seattle to put marijuana enforcement at the bottom of their priority list. Once it was passed, however, in 2003, I think it's safe to say that he has been faithful to the letter and the spirit of the law. Marijuana arrests have plummeted in Seattle. Not that they were all that high to begin with. Simple adult possession cases usually were afforded a very low priority anyway. But he did oppose it originally. He does tend to favor treatment. I wish you could say that he favors treatment over enforcement, but I can't. I don't really know, if he had $1 left in his treasury, whether that dollar would go to busting people in possession of marijuana, for example, or providing treatment to those who are addicted to hard drugs. I couldn't say. I do believe that he will be more open to conversation about drug policy reform than was Walters. Once again, that's not saying an awful lot, and so I'm going to reserve judgment, hoping that if he is in fact officially named and confirmed by the Senate, that he will in short order begin a conversation nationally and indeed internationally about what harms this drug war has caused this country.
You mentioned his background with the I-75 initiative, where he opposed it, but then once it was passed, he was able to follow the law without much complaint. Is there any record on his treatment of the medical marijuana issue there in the state of Washington?
If he has said anything, I haven't heard it. I think he has been, he's not made any public statements that I'm aware of. I don't know what his private views are on that. One can hope that given the will of the voters, as was the case in I-75 for the city, that the medical marijuana reality in the state of Washington and those other dozen states in the country will be honored, that he will in fact do what he did with I-75.
We can hope so.
Yeah.
The report here in the PI mentions also, and you had mentioned his work with the community-oriented policing system, service?
Yes, uh-huh.
I always mess up those acronyms.
Well, in this case, the program back in Washington was the Community-Oriented Policing Services operation. You take off all the capital letters and you get right down to the heart of it, which is community policing and this idea that the police serve the community and not the other way around. So when it comes to drug policy, I think our community has been well ahead of politicians on this issue. And with I-75, with medical marijuana, with 75% of the people saying that marijuana possession ought not to be a crime, I would hope that as drugs are, Gil Kerlikowske would take that into account as well.
Mm. The PI story here mentions how Kerlikowske has developed a relationship in Washington, D.C. when he was working there under the Clinton years, and that he's worked with Attorney General Eric Holder. So I guess one thing I'm wondering, and I don't know if you would know this necessarily, but what challenges do you think he faces as somebody working in a bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. compared to trying to run a major metro police department like Seattle?
Well, that's a really good question. There is mention in at least one of the articles here, pardon me, Russ, one of the articles here locally that he had coveted the DEA position.
Mm, administrator.
Which is clearly an enforcement position. That kind of concerns me. I would have hoped that he'd have his eye on the drug czar's position, which would then allow him to take a broader look to examine the medical and other issues associated with the drug issue. But there is a huge difference between running a local law enforcement agency, which has responsibilities across the board, prevention, detection, apprehension, burglaries, rapes, robberies, car prowls, gang activity, carjackings, on and on and on, domestic violence. These are issues that occupy the attention of the top cop, if you will, in any city, not to mention office politics and budgets and developing, a relationship with your own rank and file. Those are all real important issues to a local cop. When you move into the drug czar's position, on the other hand, what you're looking at, I believe, is as a bully pulpit as much as anything else. Mm-hmm. So in the case of Walters, for example, if you think marijuana is the devil's weed and you're going to do everything you can to eradicate it, you're going to use that pulpit to that end. On the other hand, if you believe that it's time for an honest conversation about drug issues, and particularly, I think these days, relating to marijuana, you'd have somebody in that office who would use it to encourage research and analysis and a more thoughtful consideration of national policy.
Mm, yeah, that's.
I do believe that any boss, or any person, I guess, in that position reports to a boss. In this case, the drug czar's position is now, and since late 80s, has been a cabinet position, which means, in effect, that his boss would be the president, possibly. I don't know if they have a relationship with the attorney general, but I think what President Obama has to say about marijuana, in every aspect of the marijuana issue, from education and prevention programs and early schooling to civil liberties and a recognition that adults ought to have the right to inject or ingest or inhale any substance they'd like into their own bodies, and particularly with marijuana, given the fact that it is demonstrably less harmful than all the other drugs, including alcohol and tobacco, that the president would be telling his drug czar, let's carve out a much more sensible and sane policy with respect to marijuana. That was a long answer. I apologize.
that's okay. It was a well-spoken one.
Well, I tend to get wrapped up in this issue.
It
defies belief that we still have the intensity and the scope of opposition to sensible drug policy reform. And I think for the first time what's happening is we're starting to see a national dialogue that I hope will get turned into something more substantive.
I think so, too. Now, looking back to our neck of the woods here in the Pacific Northwest, do you have any word on who might be replacing Chief Karlikowski? And if so, how do they stand on Seattle's local initiative and Washington's medical marijuana?
Well, there's been no statement from the mayor other than we're treating all of this as rumor at this stage and we don't have anything further to say. So let's assume that the rumor is true and that Karlikowski is nominated and confirmed. I think it's the track record in this city has been an interim chief who might come either from within the ranks or outside the ranks. And then a national search. And I can't imagine that they would deviate from that process. So we're many, many months away from learning who the candidates are and who the finalists might be.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and keep everyone up in Washington State informed. And we'll be looking forward to the confirmation of Karlikowski as the drug czar when and if it happens. Norm Stamper is a former police chief of Seattle before Chief Karlikowski and a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Check them out at leap.cc. Norm, thanks so much for helping us out today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
We leave you today with thanks again for your pledges for last Saturday's El Jefe Hot Wings Eating Contest. I made it through 25, and if you've got a pledge out there that you haven't paid yet, please make sure that you pay it through the PayPal button in the top right corner of stash.normal.org. That sends the funds directly to me here in Portland, Oregon, and we've got some expenses to pay before Normal Show Live goes on the air on Saturday, so it would be very helpful if the money was here. The stash tip jar that you've been using, if you sent it in that way or through the secure server, that's fine. It's gone through there as well. It'll just take a little longer to get the money from Washington, D.C. over to Portland, Oregon. But either way, thank you so much for sponsoring me in the Hot Wings Eating Contest. We'll have more fun stuff like that coming up in future editions of the Normal Daily Audio Stash. By Friday, from all the people who have paid their pledges, I'll be picking the top pledger and another random pledger to receive the prize package from Herbage Designs and one of my Starfish Designs exclusive glass pieces. Thanks again for playing, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.